This is a recording of the open session of the Federal Election Commission held on April 29, 2010. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Next item on the agenda is the final rules and explanation and justification for non-federal fundraising events. Vice Chair, I understand we have a number of late submitted documents.
Mr. Chairman, I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of documents to consider agenda documents 10-22, 10-22A, 10-22B, and 10-22C.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. We have a presentation from David Adkins and Amy Rothstein from the Office of General Counsel. And good morning, and when you're ready, feel free to proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. You have before you four agenda documents. They include draft final rules with accompanying explanation and justification, two sets of proposed amendments to those final rules, and alternative version of the final rules. They all would affect changes to the Commission's rules regarding federal candidate and office holder participation in non-federal fundraising events. These changes are in response to the decision of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in Shays versus FEC, which found certain aspects of the Commission's existing rules invalid. If the Commission approves the final rules in ENJ, in whatever form, the Office of General Counsel seeks authority to make technical and conforming changes to the draft. Thank you, and I'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to thank Wendy Peterson, who is expecting a baby any day now, perhaps any minute now. And if not for that, I do not think we would be here today prepared to vote on a rule, because the chairman was determined that we would do this before he left us on parental leave. And I hope you weren't expecting any onesies, because this is the baby present. You get a brand new baby rule.
I'm more than happy with that.
To baby shower. To take home with you, and I'm sure your wife will also be thrilled with this little gift. We always, of course, thank the staff when we do these things, but I really, really want to thank the staff this time, who just went above and beyond. I know for those of you out there who've been thinking, you know, been a couple of years they've been working on this, right? You know, I guess they're just not working too hard on it. You know, sometimes these things take a little bit of time to get it to the right place. And really, it's only been in the last week that it all started to come together. And I think that the staff pulled together the ENJ within about 24 hours of when we gave them the final rule text, and that was really quite a remarkable feat. So special thanks to Tommy Duncan, our general counsel, and Rosie Smith, and special thanks to Amy Rothstein and David Adkins, and Nevin Stepanovich was also helpful in this effort. I was getting emails last night well past midnight, and we were emailing again, and by, you know, 5:30 in the morning, it was really quite an extraordinary effort, and I appreciate it very much. And I also want to thank Sam Brown on my staff and Eric Wang on Commissioner Hunter's staff, who were the point people on the ninth floor for getting this document done, and also put in an awful lot of hours on it. With my colleagues' indulgence, I'd like to take a couple of minutes to sort of figure out how we got here. I've been doing this for a long time, this particular rulemaking for a long time. You know, back 2002, we got this new law. What do they call it? McCain-Feingold, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act. And it said that candidates and federal office holders shall not solicit, receive, direct, transfer, or spend funds in connection with an election for federal office unless the funds are subject to the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act. There's a similar provision on funds in connection with any election other than an election for federal office. And then there's another provision a little bit further down that says, notwithstanding the paragraph I just read, A candidate or an individual holding federal office may attend, speak, or be a featured guest at a fundraising event for a state, district, or local committee of a political party. And figuring out the relationship between that last paragraph and the first paragraph has actually been something that we've been working on since I got here. And hopefully we finally are going to get it right today. Initially, the commission looked at that and they said, well, that's a special carve-out. That section for state party fundraisers is a special carve-out, and if they're allowed to go, if federal candidates and office holders are allowed to go, then we're not going to tell them what they can and can't say once they get there. The Congress that wrote this law clearly understood what happens at these kinds of events. Fundraising takes place, and so the commission adopted a rule that said they could speak without restriction at those events. And we were sued on that, and that got sort of shot down by the courts, which said, well, we're not going to say you can't have that rule absolutely, but you're going to have to do a better job explaining and justifying it if you want that. So it came back, and I wasn't here for that first round, but I was here for the second round. Had a nice hearing, heard a lot of interesting testimony about how these events really are about fundraising, and Congress really did know that that's what would happen, and that was the reason why people go to these events, and that was the reason why you want famous people's names on the invitations to the events, because it helps to raise the money. So they must have known that was going to happen, and that the original rule, these witnesses said at that hearing, second time the commission considered it, said we should stick with the rule that had been adopted before. And that wasn't the unanimous view of all the witnesses, but that was the view of a number of witnesses who obviously were persuasive, because that's what the commission decided to do. In fact, to me, they were so persuasive that I came up with a whole other theory on this, which was that if indeed any time people go to these events, everybody understands that they are for fundraising purposes, then perhaps the best rule would be, a nice, neat, easy rule to implement and understand, would be one that said, let's look at what kind of money is being raised at any particular event, and if there's soft money being raised there, then federal candidates and office holders shouldn't be there, they shouldn't be on the invitations, they shouldn't be in any way associated with it, and they won't be construed as raising funds that way. And if there's hard money being raised, then they can go and we don't have to worry about disclaimers or placards or what they say and what they don't say. They can just, they're free to go and say whatever they want. And it still seems to me that that would have been the best rule and the easiest rule and the one most in keeping with the spirit of BCRA. I never had support for that rule. But I still like the idea. And I admit that it is somewhat in conflict with the section that says, you know, what do we do with these state party fundraising events where we know they're allowed to go? So we were sued. After amending the ENJ and issuing the same rule again, we were sued again, and the court said, No, it's not an exemption to the fundraising ban, the soft money fundraising ban. It merely clarifies it. Let's see if I think I have the language in here somewhere. It merely clarifies that for those kinds of events, not, you know, even if it might otherwise look like they might be raising funds, this is not a special exemption for fundraising. And the problem for me, based on my theory, is that once you get that merely clarifying language, then it becomes harder to sustain the notion that attending, speaking, or being a featured guest could be in and of itself a solicitation. So we had another hearing after the rule was struck down again, and it was clear that, you know, the without restriction language had to go, and we started thinking about what else we might do to clarify the rule and make life easier for people. And oddly enough, we got very few comments. I think this is actually a sleeper rulemaking. I think it's actually quite important. We noticed that we were going to look not just at state party events, but at all kinds of fundraisers that federal candidates and office holders participate in. And yet we did not get any comments, and I regret this, from anybody from that broader world of organizations that interact with officeholders in a fundraising capacity. And I think that's unfortunate. But the comments that we did were fairly consistent. The comments that we did get were fairly consistent. And surprising to me that even the reform community seemed to be on board with our doing a unified rule that would have one rule for all kinds of fundraising events. And in light of what the court said, and in light of what all the commenters said, we have come up with a rule. It took a lot of work, took a lot of compromise, but I think at the end of the day we have a rule that's going to be pretty easy for people to understand, one rule for all kinds of fundraising activities that the members might be involved in and the candidates. I think it'll make their lives easier. I think I see we got a couple of lawyers out there who advise clients all the time. I'm hoping this won't be too hard for you guys to explain to your clients. I think that we didn't have time to do it today, but I think we would like to issue, hopefully shortly, maybe an FAQ or some kind of bullet points to help even make it simpler for you to understand exactly what the key points are in this rule. So I find myself, despite the fact that this was not my policy preference, as stated in previous times, reasonably comfortable with where we end up. I think, as I said, if I were king of the world and I could write my own rule, it would probably look a little bit differently. It's not my job to just kind of make things up on my own. I have to take cognizance of the comments that we get and particularly what the courts say about what Congress said. And I think that this rule does fairly effectuate what the courts have said and what Congress said and hopefully what Congress anticipated. And so at an appropriate time, I will be happy to vote for whichever version of the amended rule wins. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it is true that we were trying to get this rule done in advance of baby Peterson, who I don't think has a name yet, before he's born. But we also are very cognizant of the fact that there is an election in 6 months. So we wanted to make sure that we got guidance out to people. Yeah, there is that. People out for this election cycle. So that was obviously a driving force, in addition to the fact that Greg Scott's group is having a conference next Monday and Tuesday, and four party committees. And we thought, wouldn't it be great to be able to actually give them some clear guidance on Monday, as opposed to telling them to send out two mailers or something along those lines. So there's a lot of factors, getting us to try to get this accomplished today, and I agree with everything Commissioner Weintraub said with respect to all the hard work that the staff and commissioner's offices and everybody put in on this effort. It really was all hands on deck, and in particular, thank you to Amy Rothstein and David Adkins and all the rest of OGC as well. Eric Wing on our staff, as always, the Scribner, and the producer of more work than 10 people put together. We thank him as well, in particular, for this rulemaking, and to the commenters, who, as Commissioner Weintraub suggested, while we didn't maybe get as many comments as she would have liked, we thought the comments were helpful, and we think that the overall process went well for this rulemaking. We hope we can follow it for the upcoming rulemakings that we're going to hope to be doing over the summer. In particular, the notice spelled out the different proposals, I think, very clearly, so the public had a really good idea of where we were headed. We had really good public hearings on the matter, and I think everybody carefully considered what the public told us to do. So the thing that we're hopefully passing today, I think everyone will agree that it is clear guidance for candidates and party committees and all other people going forward. It does cover not only state party events, but all non-federal fundraising events, and it also covers publicity and gets into the details of what you can do for publicity. Specifically, federal candidates or office holders are able to appear on publicity, even if the publicity is soliciting non-federal funds, as long as there's the appropriate disclaimer. So as Commissioner Weintraub said, I think we will put out a frequently asked questions or some kind of bullet points, further explaining it, but I hope that everybody agrees with us that the rule is as clear a guidance as we were able to come up with at this point in time. Thank you very much.
Any further questions or comments? Vice Chair.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank my colleagues for their efforts as well, Commissioner Hunter and Commissioner Weintraub, and of course our dedicated staff and all of OGC and throughout the building who help us actually get these things on blue and ready for a meeting like this. I agree with Commissioner Hunter that I think does provide very clear guidance for both publicity and at events, and I think that's very important. It's especially important for events where someone else at the event might be raising non-federal funds outside of the limits of the Act, to make it very clear that federal candidates and office holders are not raising funds that would exceed the limits, prohibitions, or requirements of the Act. And I think it's very useful to have clear and uniform guidance for all of those who want to participate in these events. So I think that this rule accomplishes that. My initial thought on the way the statute was written was that a very logical and I think from my reading, perhaps a more logical reading, is that the statute treats one type of events differently from another type of events. But informed by the court's reading of the statute, and obviously we're doing this rulemaking in response to a rule, and all of the commenters who supported the reading of the statute that would bring bring state candidate events under the same rule as the state and local party events, I'm happy to support this approach and this rule.
Anything further? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My goal when I began at the commission was, when at least with this rule, was to try to provide to the public clear guidance. It was amazing to me how difficult it had become for politicians and political operatives, local parties, and contributors to make sense of what they could and couldn't do. There was a series of advisory opinions, some of which were internally inconsistent, and then there were some enforcement matters that seemed to say something else, and then, well, court cases then second-guessed the rule. And it ended up taking a lot of time to scrub invitations. Personally, it was good for me. I could charge people for it. As a matter of policy, it really wasn't so good that they had to call a lawyer and figure out how they're supposed to do a local party event. So the old rule was good for commerce, bad for policy. And when I joined the commission, I wanted to, in a weird way, do the opposite of what maybe most people would do. I wanted to eliminate some of what I used to do. And so to my former colleagues, even though I'm still a lawyer, okay, former colleagues in the election law bar, sorry, but your life, you're going to become more of the Maytag repairman, I hope, when it comes to scrubbing invites. The rule is a holistic rule. It would have been easy just to strike the without limitation language that was in the prior rule. That's really what the Shays 3 Court had a problem with, meaning when you go to a state party event, you can give a speech without limitation, and they raised the very real concern that what if you had a very small event and you were dealing with contributors one-on-one? That would seem to be the sort of thing Congress wanted to prevent, but yet permit the larger speech to the party faithful. So the rule probably went a little too far there, and whether I think that or not doesn't matter. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals certainly thought that, so here we are. So it would have been easy to do that, but I think it made sense to go a little bit farther than that and try to synthesize a coherent rule so normal people can figure out what they can and can't do. And I think the rule is relatively short. It's 3.5 pages double-spaced, which for federal regulations is quite to the point. The explanation and justification, of course, is significantly longer, but a lot of it is background information and justification for the rule. But the bottom line with the rule is, if a federal office holder asks for soft money, they're going to have a problem. If they don't ask for soft money, then they're not going to have a problem. It's going to allow state and local parties to still do what they do, state and local candidates to do what they need to do, and it's going to make sure the public is aware of who's actually asking for the money. And we go as far as actually putting in specific examples of what works as far as some sort of disclaimer or whether we call it disclaimer or language, just clarifying who's actually asking for the money. It's in there, and I think this meets my goal of essentially putting together something that, as Commissioner Weintraub alluded to, a lawyer could then explain to a client without a lot of time being spent. I think it removes much of the confusion, hopefully, but it's true to the statute in that there really is not a lot of I don't really see any loophole potential here, because if you ask for soft money, that's going to be a problem if you're a federal office holder. So with that, I'll turn it back, and of course I want to thank those who really pulled the oar on this. The way we do rules here is something I didn't realize till I got here. They have the subcommittees, and it's Commissioner Hunter and Commissioner Weintraub were on point for this, and I really want to thank both of them, particularly Commissioner Hunter, for really paying attention to details and making sure that this is a clear rule and one that people can understand when they read it once. I don't think you're going to have to read it multiple times and do the usual guessing game of, wow, do they mean this or do they mean that? I think it's relatively clear. And being one who's pretty good at finding lack of clarity in rules, when I say it's pretty clear, I think that probably means it's pretty clear. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield back and do note that I think when we do consider the rule, I'm going to have a few technical amendments, and I make those at the appropriate time.
Anything further? Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I'd like to move approval or adoption of agenda document 1022, as well as agenda document 1022A. Let me speak to the matter, if I may. The agenda document 1022 is, of course, the operative document that we'll be voting on. But in the process of negotiation, and I want to, by the way, compliment, even though we say this is a crystal clear document and everybody can understand that it did take us a lot of time to get there, and the proof will be in the pudding, but I do think it's a big improvement. And I was there, too, with Commissioner Weintraub when we tried to do it once and didn't work out. And then we thought, well, if we take out the words, I thought, too, just without limitation, no problem there. But then we did realize, with our experience, that there was more that was needed to be done. And so hopefully this will solve a number of problems that arose during the AO process. We tried to hobble together our various views on how to interpret the statute. The document number 1022A represents what I would like to see us adopt in a couple of areas where I thought, at least in my view, it added perhaps some more clarity. And it had to do with really giving notice during an event, and had to do with providing some clarity regarding invitations and solicitations to the event. We've all had our chance to do a lot of talking. These are self-explanatory. I know they don't enjoy the support of the majority of the board, of the commission, but I did want to make a record that these are ones I would like to have seen us adopt. Then, as I understand it, upon losing that motion, then I will move kind of a adoption, which I understand does pick up a number of these, and hopefully we'll have the approval of the board. So at this time, I'm ready to ask for a vote on this, I think. And
Does everyone understand the motion? The motion is to pass the underlying rule amended by document 10-22-A. Any discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the course of negotiating the rule in the E&J, there were various issues that it became clear we didn't agree on, and I was content to either take them off the table or try and come up with something that we could agree on, that being the ultimate goal. So I would have been happy to go straight to the agreement, but in solidarity with my colleague, I will support your motion. I think that you've highlighted some interesting aspects of the rule that are that we did leave out on purpose. So I, like I said, in solidarity, but I'm also committed to the end product that we did agree on, and I hope my vote in the first instance will not detract from my vote in the second instance in my colleagues' minds.
Any further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. The motion fails 3-3 with Commissioners Walther, Weintraub, and the Vice Chair in favor, and Commissioners McGann, Hunter, and myself opposed. Okay. Commissioner Walther.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to move adoption of, again, Agenda Document 1022 as amended by Document 1022B, which does pick up in a couple of ways some of the issues that I was concerned about with different phraseology. I'd like to say, as with the other commissioners, this has been a long process. I think all of us were pleasantly, I don't know why I would say surprised, but really appreciative of the effort that was put into this by staff, Amy Rothstein and David Adkins. It was great. And so we thank you for all the late nights. And Amy said she barely made the 1 o'clock train home last night. I'm sure that's true because I was getting emails late, then Ellen called me at 6 in the morning. And so I said you could, and you did. So it was one of those things where we're trying to get things done as quickly as we could. So it was a great effort between Commissioner Hunter and Commissioner Weintraub trying to synthesize our diverse views on this subject. And for Commissioner Chairman Peterson for insisting that we get it done today.
Any further discussion on the motion? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can support this one. To me, what's on the table now is I think a cleaner way and an easier way to say most of what was in the preceding motion that failed. Because some of what Commissioner Walther suggested, I agree with in substance. It got a little wordy for me, and I preferred the cleaner language in this motion. So I'll be able to support what's on the table currently. I also would like to offer what I think is a friendly amendment, which is Agenda Document 10-22-C, and some of this are things I picked up, and at least one of these is something that Commissioner Weintraub picked up. And for example, we had neglected to include agents of federal office holders in one part of the rule, so you could see a problem there. If an agent could authorize the use of a federal candidate's name for a solicitation, then that would be a potential problem. So we caught that one. And the other ones are technical, a parenthetical on a particular AO to essentially just make it under the circumstances described in the request, as opposed to trying to spell out all the facts in a long parenthetical. Another technical amendment: when you have to put one of these disclaimers on there saying a federal office holder is not asking for soft money, that can be put in the box with the paid for by. There was some debate over whether it had to be a separate box or no box. To me, logically, it makes sense to stick it in the same place, because the purpose of the paid-for-by in a box was Congress's effort to try to get the source of the material set apart from the content of the material. And because, to me, who is soliciting funds is tied to the source of the material, it makes sense to tie it together, and I think that is actually helpful in the eyes of the public. So my amendment, I think, is a friendly amendment to Commissioner Walther's amendment. I do note at one point last night we got to the point discussing sort of disclaimers, and I sort of said, why don't we have a logo, the No Soft Money logo, we put that on everything, and there was actually discussion, and we seemed to have generated the same one. It's the Monopoly guy with a bag of cash with a red line through it. If you stick that on all your posters, that means no soft money, lapel pin perhaps, and we realized that we were here too late. So. And then others probably huddled and said, we really can't let him near rulemakings because you're going to get, you know, visual images and things. So I'm not going to offer the Monopoly Man. That's not part of the amendment, but the Agenda Document 1022C is, and I think it's a friendly amendment, and I ask the Chair if he consider that in order and part of the motion.
Of course I will. You almost could have gotten me to go with the cartoon, too.
Pardon?
You almost could have gotten me to go with the cartoon, too.
It's not really a cartoon. It's a serious thing.
I take that back.
It sets aside any linguistic barriers the voters may have. It's a universal symbol.
Right. That was a bad adjective I used. It should have been message.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You guys have interesting discussions on your side. I would just like to clarify, I believe, you know, this will be a, maybe this is a friendly clarification, that 10-22B actually was prepared when we had, we were in such a hurry, we did the E&J in three different pieces initially. So it refers to part two and part three, which don't actually exist anymore. But I know the staff knows, and we all know, where these words are supposed to go. So I just, for those who might be looking for part two and not finding it, that's why. And I also wanted to add to the friendliness and add another friendly amendment that we would also include technical and conforming amendments, and particularly conforming amendments on this additional language of the about agency. We're going to have to insert that also in the E&J in a few places, and I think we all understand that.
Does everyone understand the motion? Any further discussion? Before we call for the vote, I just wanted just to add my two cents that I enthusiastically support the final rule and accompanying explanation and justification as well. I think that this provides clear and comprehensive guidance. I think that this will be a real favor for those who, you know, for federal candidates and office holders who do want to participate in state and local fundraising events and all non-federal fundraising events and the associated publicity. I think that this is a good rule, and I think that the process that that resulted in this rule has been a very productive one. And I thank my colleagues for all their work, especially Commissioners Weintraub and Hunter for their leadership on this and their respective staffs and all of our staffs who put in a lot of time and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in order to put these to get these rules in a position where we can vote on them today. And I would also be remiss if I didn't thank the Office of General Counsel, especially Ms. Rothstein and Mr. Adkins, for your yeoman's work on this rule. They did tremendous work, and it is very much appreciated. As Commissioner Hunter noted, we don't have a name for the baby yet, but since, as Commissioner Weintraub said, this rule is considered maybe a gift to that baby, maybe I should name him Solicitation. I'll be sure to put the appropriate disclaimers on it, though. So
on the diaper.
So, without further ado, I'd be let's call for the yeas and all the yeas and nays. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.